Welcome to the Big Ugly Podcast, the only podcast about, for, and hosted by the Big Uglies themselves, the offensive line. With me is my partner, Nate the Great. I'm the California Cajun. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Craig, just excited to get this started because you know what? I always listen to these podcasts. They talk about all the divas, the receivers. But you know what I always want to hear about is the Big Uglies. And that's why I'm so glad to be doing this with you.
The heartbeat of the team, the Big Uglies. For those uninitiated, we're talking, of course, about the offensive linemen who never get the attention, the credit, or the admiration that I think they all deserve. Nate, yeah, what is it about the offensive line that really made us feel like we needed to get on the air and tell everybody about it? What is it about it that no one wants to talk about?
You know what? Nobody wants to talk about them in the first place. But they want to blame things on them when things go the wrong way. You know, but you know what I've always liked about being a lineman is you cannot not be a grinder and be a lineman. Mm-hmm. You are grinding every single play on the offensive line or defensive line. The trenches, the game is truly won in the trenches to me.
And lost. Yep. You know, it's one of those things. You can be a receiver and you can play 25 plays and you get shut down 24 times, but you have that one home run, you catch an 80-yard touchdown pass, and you're going to be on SportsCenter, and people are going to talk about you. They ain't going to talk about how you got beat 24 times, but you get that one flash. It is the opposite for us linemen. If you do your job 24 times, and you mess up that one time, and that one time your quarterback gets nailed, that's what they're going to know you for. It is a grinder position where you have to go show up with your lunch pail, and go to work and do your job and expect no one to appreciate you for it.
I mean, one of the things I used to always love is, you know, just grinding against an opponent all game and coming and realizing by the end of the game, you start to wear them out, you know, and when you start to wear them out and you start to have your way and dictating how they're being, your side of the line is going, it's a great feeling.
You're hitting them. You're double teaming that D tackle. You're driving them into the backfield. Your first quarter, 2-3 yards a pop. Fourth quarter, 5-6 yards a pop. And you see that light in their eyes start to change. And they understand that this is your line. And they're going to do what you tell them to do. There is no feeling like it. It is imposing your will on another man.
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. And they hear the lamentation of their women.
Exactly.
Ah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Thing about offensive line that translates well into life is that you don't do it for recognition. You don't do it for stats. You don't do it for clout. You do it because it helps the team win.
Yes.
It translates really well into being a teammate in a professional environment. It translates well into being a teammate among your friends, being a part of your family, because you don't do things just because they're for you or because they're what you want to do. You do them because they're the right thing. You become fathers who care more about what's going on with your kids and how your wife's doing. You become a coworker that cares more about getting the product done and getting the job done than personal accolades, because you're built in this mindset that what I do isn't important. What we do is important. And that's something you can't always teach a showboat and wide receiver. You can teach it to these lunch pail, hard-nosed, big, ugly offensive linemen.
Absolutely. We are protectors. That is what we do. And, you know, I've always loved that part of it. And everything you just said, you hit the nail right on the head.
Bodyguards. We're bodyguards and pets.
Oh, yeah.
The first pick in the 2022 NFL draft.
So getting started on our first episode of the Big Ugly Podcast, we want to talk about the recent NFL draft and the first round prospects of those offensive linemen. So I do have our list out here, and the first offensive lineman off the board was Ikem Ekwonu, the offensive tackle from NC State going to the Panthers. Let's talk a little bit about the Panthers' offensive line situation and why that's a great move or a bad one.
Well, I personally think that Evans not going number one overall was a big surprise to a lot of people. I do think that the Panthers need all the offensive line help that they can get. I mean, they can't do anything, it seems to me, other than a trick play where nobody's expecting Sam Darnold to run the ball, and he runs the ball. You know, that's and Christian McCaffrey's getting banged up so hard every year. I mean, you gotta.
Yeah, it's crazy what kind of elite talent they have that he plays three games a year.
Yeah.
And is part of that they're not protected for him? Is he taking too much punishment?
I think that, you know, I think so many factors go into play here as far as like with injuries and players. And, you know, a lot of the times running backs get hurt when they're hit behind or in the line of scrimmage area because they're getting these low hits, twisting ankles and twisting knees inside. So they got to have somebody to open up some space for him so he's less likely to be hit because he is looking like Mr. Glass.
So I think this is a good pick for them for a couple of reasons. And one of those reasons is exactly what we said. McCaffrey needs all the help he can to not get pummeled behind the line of scrimmage, right? He's one of those players that they want to use him like with LaDainian Tomlinson, but he's really more of a Darren Sproles. He doesn't need that kind of workload. But one of the other big reasons that I think this is a good pick, that division has some nasty defensive lines in it. You talk about the Buccaneers have a ferocious pass rush. The Saints have a really mean pass rush. Even Atlanta, who's not good defensively, they have some guys on that D-line that can get after you. That's the kind of division where if you don't have the big uglies up front, it's going to snowball real quick. And I think we saw a lot of that last year with that turnover with their quarterback position. You know, that we're not really sure who's calling the plays. We don't really know who's going to be running back week to week. The only consistency you can have is that strong O-line, and that was really lacking for them last year.
I agree.
So that brings us to another big offensive lineman coming off the board. But I think both of us thought he was going first. This is going to the New York Giants, Evan Neal, the offensive tackle from Alabama. Now, I definitely thought he was going first. When we were doing all our mock drafts, I wanted to trade up and get him. I wanted a big road grader at offensive tackle. But it goes to the Giants. And I think this is a great pick. How do you feel about this one?
I feel like it's a great pick for the Giants, too. I mean, Daniel Jones needs all the protection and all the help he can get because, you know, it's all riding on him this year and how he stays upright and able to make the right decisions down the field. And you can't do that without some good offensive linemen. My only concern here is that the Giants seem to always pick, like, the nastiest, grittiest linemen, and you never really hear about them or anything of them later. Like, I remember they drafted a guy, his last name was Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
He was a mauler. He was a beast. He looked like a mountain with arms. And, you know, I think injuries must have gone to him because I don't hear ever anything about him anymore.
Yeah. I think a part of that is that it is New York. And there's that huge spotlight of the media. And as the media does, they focus on things like a flashy wide receiver and maybe not an offensive lineman doing his job.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. This is a great pick for them. They have this young core that you talk about, the young quarterback. Saquon Barkley is supposed to be back and healthy. There are a lot of reasons that this offense could be productive if they can protect at that line of scrimmage. And Neal, for me, was the most NFL-ready of all of the tackle prospects. He's able to step in there, and he should be ready to go. I think that immediately makes the team better.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we've made the New York fans happy. Going down the line, we have the Seattle Seahawks going with Mississippi State offensive tackle Charles Cross, another guy that was really high on my draft board, another guy that I would have really liked us to go up and get. Mean, nasty. The kind of offensive lineman that you don't like to be around unless you're an offensive lineman. How do you feel about that pick?
You know what? I, too, wanted the Chargers to jump up and get Cross because we are in desperate need of a right tackle. And I thought that with him, we would be unstoppable. So I really do like that pick. I was so surprised because the Seahawks going after a lineman in the first round. What?
What an, you know, odd, like, smart decision they made.
Absolutely. You know, like, I just feel like, you know, that was kind of like a jam to the gut of Russell Wilson leaving the team, and then all of a sudden, okay, now we'll draft some first round talent for offense.
Now we'll protect you now that you're not here anymore. Now we'll get you the stuff you could have used before. What an odd situation Seattle is, shipping their Hall of Fame potentially quarterback out and then starting to put pieces around him. It's just bizarre. So, Cross, we like that pick. Good player potentially. Let's see. The next offensive tackle, offensive lineman, doesn't come off the board until 15. That's to the Houston Texans taking Texas A&M Kenyon Green. So I like this pick a lot. Personally, I don't know why. I always like when college guys go to a pro team in the same area. It just seems like a nice homecoming. I don't know. I'm sentimental like that. But Texas A&M, they have a history of really good offensive linemen, particularly lately. Kenyon Green is no exception. He's a fantastic player. Not necessarily just a strictly offensive tackle. I think he can be developed into guard if they need him to. Being the Texans, they probably need more help at tackle because they're terrible everywhere, and that's a higher priority position. How do you feel about the Texans adding Kenyon Green?
Like I said, you cannot go wrong when you're a team like the Texans adding protection for a young quarterback. You know what I'm saying? Davis Mills, I feel like, has a lot of potential. And yeah, to see that potential, you're going to need some protection for him. You know, I really feel like they've always had a pretty, like, quiet, solid offensive line over there in Houston.
Yeah. You don't have a season like Deshaun Watson had without at least mediocre line play. You don't accidentally have that kind of a year.
Right.
As talented as a guy may be, you just can't get it done without that kind of help. And they've kind of under the radar for sure. They've had solid line play. So here's the one that was surprising to me, but I'm a big fan of. The Los Angeles Chargers, which are never not the San Diego Chargers, every time anyone asks me, taking a guard. They have him listed on here as an offensive lineman, but I see him as a guard in the NFL. Zion Johnson from Boston College. I love this guy. I wanted us to go up and get him too. I think this is the best possible pick for the Chargers, building inside out to protect a young quarterback with young weapons. I love it. As a Chargers fan, tell me how great this pick is.
Oh, man, when I seen that, like, I was happy because I wanted an offensive line. I always want an offensive line in the first round anyway. But, you know, the fact that they went and got this mountain of a man right there was a great feeling, you know. And like I, you know, have talked to you about, I really feel like our question mark at our offensive line is our right tackle position, you know. So we're going to you know, still have the jury out on that position. But, you know, with that pick, the other guys we already have solidified on the offensive line, we could, like, totally move into, like, a top rankings of offensive line.
Yeah, one of the things I really like about Herbert is that how you pronounce it, Herbert? Yeah. I'm in Louisiana. A lot of people read that as A-Bear down here. One of the things he does, and a lot like former Saints quarterback Drew Brees, when he feels pressure, he steps up into the pocket as opposed to trying to escape outside, which is, I think, one of the reasons that they went guard in front of tackle to protect him, because that's going to play into that situation where if he's coming up in the pocket, he needs more protection in the middle than necessarily on the outsides. So great, great young quarterback, great addition to helping him out on the offensive line. I love it. It's one of my favorite picks of the whole first round.
Absolutely. You know what I've always loved is the fact that Drew Brees always came back and did his offseason program with Philip Rivers and stuff like that. And, you know, I've seen him, clips of him with Justin Herbert too at Chargers practices. So, you know, I know that, you know, he's definitely an influence in Justin Herbert too, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, if Brandon Staley, our head coach, which I loved last year, by the way, his win big or go for it all, no guts, no glory play calling, I loved it. You know,
is that why you guys tied the Raiders in that last game of the season?
We didn't tie it, but we went like 6 for 6 on fourth downs.
Oh, that was actually a fun game. That's true.
But, you know, we kind of like had that whole mantra of we were that team that was going to go for it on fourth down all year long. And being somebody like a Charger fan like myself who has seen us play it safe, not go for it, try to do something like less aggressive, to see some of this aggression work out last year was like really cool to see, you know. And I'm the type, you know, you live by the gun, you die by the gun. And there was times it didn't work out, and I'm okay with that, because at the end of the day, you got something aggressive brewing, you know.
Yeah, anyone who lived through the Marty Schottenheimer years deserves to have some aggressive play calling now.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right, so now we're up to my favorite pick in the whole first round, and my favorite player on the board, actually. Offensive tackle Trevor Penning from Northern Iowa goes to my New Orleans Saints. And now we did all these on our other show on this network, BS and Beer and the Beer Run podcast. We talked a lot about the draft coming up to it. And Trevor Penning was always my guy because he's a freak athlete who really kind of was under the radar because he played at a small school. He played against poorer competition, but physically is an absolute freak. He's a polar bear stuffed into shoulder pads. Just one of those guys that's strong and fast and mean and nasty and has the attitude that you want and the athleticism that you hope for. And the only really thing holding him back from being a top five pick is that he played against a bunch of nobodies. So for me, this is exciting for me. This is the guy I'm going to be watching for. We'll talk about that a little bit later. That I want to see if that kind of mean nastiness and that kind of athleticism can translate to the next level. And of course, that can depend a lot on coaching, a lot on what kind of situation he's in. It's a big ask. He's stepping in for a former Pro Bowler in Terron Armstead, who's now moved to Miami. So it's going to be a big question mark for the Saints is how that offensive tackle position works out, particularly on the left.
I absolutely agree. He was somebody I also wanted the Chargers to draft.
Because I'm sensing a theme that we just wanted a good lineman on our team.
Well, you know what? Just because, you know, like we lost our last game of the year with a chance to go to the playoffs due to right tackle play. Oof. And to have him in there would have been huge. I remember seeing clips of him coming up to the draft of not just blocking guys, but finishing.
Yes, mauling
hammering,
people.
Hammering guys into the ground. And I was just like, and when it was all coming down to it and he was still there, I really thought that he was going to be our guy. But you know what? You cannot go wrong with either one of our draft picks, I feel like.
I agree with you 100%. I feel like Zion Johnson is a safer pick. Like I'm more confident he's going to be a great player. But I love the upside of Trevor Penning. I love both of those picks.
And you know what? We have a guy on our roster out of a small school in Trey Pipkins. And he has been developmental, but I feel like Penning is levels above him already just by the nastiness that I've seen of his style of play.
Yeah, it's weird. Sometimes you get linemen who are crazy aggressive, mean, nasty, and sometimes you have really athletic linemen, and he's that weird combination of both where he's really strong, really fast, and also kind of a total jerk, which you love to have on the offensive line.
Oh, hell yeah. The meaner, the better.
Speaking of meaner, going down this list, we're getting towards the end of the first round. We do have offensive tackle from Tulsa, Tyler Smith, joining America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I didn't see a lot of Tyler Smith playing at Tulsa other than film leading up to the draft, but he looks to be an accomplished pass blocker. He's definitely fits their scheme. You know, despite having Zeke Elliott, the Cowboys are not a run-the-ball team first anymore. They spread it out as well as anybody. Dak Prescott and those receivers are very much comfortable with just throwing it 50 times a game. So I think adding a pass-blocking tackle is a good move for them. You know, we're later in the first round. I don't know how well he's going to translate, but it's certainly a good move for them at that. You know, guys, we're getting back down to the end of the round. There's only one more offensive lineman in the first draft we get to talk about. Tyler Linderbaum, a center from Iowa, goes first round to the Baltimore Ravens at 25. I don't know the last time I saw a center go in the first round. As a center myself, I love it. It's fantastic. You don't usually see that. And there's usually a reason for it. What is it about the Ravens offense that requires a center in the first round?
I mean, you know, you think about all the big quarterbacks and the safety net that they have from having a good center. You know, a guy that is like the quarterback of the offensive line assigning things to help out the quarterback essentially make the play behind them has always been a real key. You know, I hate centers. But they think that they're in charge of the offensive line.
Mostly because they are.
But I'll tell you what, there is value in having a good center. I've played with some okay centers, and you know, they all have a really good insight on being able to direct the guys on either side of them on what to do. And you look at like Corey Linsley when he was with the Green Bay Packers. Mm. You know, he's a great center over there in Green Bay. You look at Jeff Saturday with Peyton Manning. I mean,
connection with him and Peyton was fantastic.
It comes to some iconic players when you think of them playing together with the center, what the center can do for the quarterback. And I think that, you know, having a center like Lindenbaum is only going to help Lamar Jackson, you know, maybe get a better grasp himself of this offense, because, you know, the center is definitely going to be somebody that he could rely on a lot.
Yeah, and looking at what the Ravens have, they just traded a receiver, obviously, but they've got a lot of running backs. They've got a lot of pieces. I'm one of those guys that thinks that Lamar Jackson has all the potential in the world, and I kind of think that with the way the Ravens are shifting more away from big playmaker receivers to now solidifying that offensive line, it might really help him get to that next level of elite quarterback, and I'm excited for it. I hope it works out. Okay, so we're both going to pick one of our rookie offensive linemen this year that we're going to watch for. You know, as a Saints fan and as a biased, terrible person that I am, I'm going with Trevor Penning. So we just talked about him a little bit. He's a left tackle. He's being asked to take over for perennial all-pro Pro Bowler Terron Armstead, who has now gone to Miami. Saints just couldn't afford him. There was a report where Armstead was waiting to see if Deshaun Watson went to New Orleans and maybe he would have taken a pay cut to stay if he had, but Watson moved on. He's in Cleveland, might never play again. Who cares? And Armstead is now in Miami with a lot of exciting players down there too. He's joining Tua and their new addition at wide receiver from the Chiefs, whose name escapes me. There's a lot going on in Miami for him. Good for him. I don't care. I care about the Saints. And on those Saints, we have a new left tackle. We talked about him a minute ago. He's a physical specimen. He's mean. He's nasty. And he's from a small school, so we're not really sure how it's going to translate yet. So far in training camp, he's only been taking second team reps. Pre-existing? Offensive tackle James Hurst has been taking first team reps left tackle. He plays a lot because Armstead always gets hurt. So Hurst is very battle tested. He's experienced with starting for this offense. The Saints were ravaged by injuries last year, offensive line particularly so. They lost snaps from every position except I think Ruiz played every game, and he went from right guard to center, so even he didn't play in position the whole season. So for me, health across the board is important, but I really want to see if Penning can step up to the plate, surpass Hurst in preseason and in training camp, and start as a rookie on the offensive line. Of all the positions, we know offensive line is really hard to start as a rookie. There's definitely a learning curve. Some of the best linemen in the world don't start their first year. Something about going from college to the NFL, it's just bigger. It's just stronger. You need those extra couple of years in the weight room and with these guys to really develop. Very rarely do offensive linemen come in and perform as rookies. So it's going to be a real big question mark for me. And that's what I'm starting off this season, going into it. First offensive lineman rookie that I'm watching for, Trevor Penning, New Orleans Saints.
I feel like, he has a lot to watch for. And like you said, I think that the outside guys the most, the right tackles, left tackles, they have the hardest time transitioning into the NFL with all these freak edge rushers you have, you know. So I do agree with that. You know, I do feel like, the rookie that I'm looking at this year, I'm going to keep it home too. I'm going to go Zion Johnson still. You know, I feel like, that's just solidifying the inside of our offensive line. I really am looking for him to take our inside run game to the next level with Austin Eckler being able to hide behind that big old body of his and make some cuts behind him, you know. So I'm really looking forward to that. I I feel like, you know, the interior line is a little bit easier to adjust. You know, when you play interior line, there's a lot that you can hide as far as with weakness in the interior offensive line. So I feel like, you know, it's an easier transition into the NFL, but I feel like with his size and his toughness, it's going to be an easy transition for him.
Yeah, I would say for guard, I agree completely. I think center is tough because of all the different calls and protections that you're going to have to learn. But at guard, you're much easier to protect. You know, you're much easier to slide protections a certain direction. You're much easier situation where if you have a glaring hole, you want it to be at guard because you can collapse something down. You can slide your center over. You can roll out the other way. If you're one of your tackles are just Swiss cheese, there's not much you can do. I mean, you can try to step up in the pocket, but there's not much of a pocket if you have a question mark at that spot. Center is the same way. If the front of your line is weak, the best you can do is try to pinch the guards in and try to collapse everything in. But guard is really the only offensive lineman spot you can kind of protect. And I say kind of loosely because as Saints fans might know watching Cesar Ruiz last year, sometimes a guard just fails and everybody knows it.
Absolutely. You know, I know you've had the luxury of having to work with very poor guards in your football career. And, you know, it definitely makes a difference when you have a guard you don't have to protect as much as a guard that you have to pretty much block for as a center. So I've always appreciated a good center being able to make up for weaker links.
I agree 100%. If you have a guard that you can really trust on one side, the center is able to kind of dictate protections around where you do have those weaknesses. And having a guard like Johnson, if he develops to the point where we think he will, he's going to be an all-star, you know? And having that kind of protection on one side at guard really means the center is able to more effectively help with that left side, make sure he's picking up backside, keeping an eye on those linebackers. It really opens him up to be more of what a center should be as when he's not babysitting a weak spot.
Yeah, you know, and if Zion Johnson can rub off some of his toughness onto the Sioux Falls guy, Trey Pipkins, that we've been trying to develop the last couple of years, or even Storm Norton. I remember watching Storm Norton the week of the Senior Bowl, and everybody was really high on him. When I found out that we signed him as a free agent, I was pretty excited about it. He did kind of disappoint me at the end of the year right there. So, you know, I'm looking for Zion Johnson's toughness to rub off on some of those guys over on the right side of the line because that's where he's going to be. So, you know, I'm hoping that that really helps out. I'm really watching Trey Pipkins a lot this year too to see, you know, what he does. You know, if our offensive line, like I said, if he could be solid, Justin Herbert is going to have another monster year.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And protecting that guy is all you really have to do. He'll do the rest. All right. One thing we want to do going into this season is we want to establish our first week of the season going into it, our offensive line power rankings. Now, hopefully these wildly shift and fluctuate and drop and fall. This is just what we think going into the year, what we think are going to be the five best offensive lines. Hopefully I'm all wrong and the Saints are number one by week two. But this is where we're starting out. These are going to change every week, depending on who's having a good week, who's having a bad week, who's playing who. We're going to go ahead and tell you our top fives going into the season. Nate, tell me about your top five offensive lines.
All right. You know, I got to get, you know, big influence in my offensive line ranking has to be just how they are as a unit and, you know, the freeness and play calling that they give their team. You know, I really think that the offensive line is the dictator for what you could do as a football team. So, you know, I went with the 49ers as my number one offensive line. And,
You know, a lot of that has to do with Trent Williams. He is a nasty son of a gun, and I've always loved that about him. But you know, the one thing that I have to give to the Niners is it doesn't matter who you line up back there to run the ball. They are going to run the ball.
They did have a wide receiver score like 10 touchdowns running the ball last year.
Anybody who's anybody was running the ball back there. And, you know, I think that that has a lot to do with the solidarity that they have as a unit, you know, and that's one thing they're, you know, all you really know about is Trent Williams, but all these other guys are putting in work. They all have, you know, top rankings in their respective positions because they're a quiet, take your lunch to work, punch the clock in and take care of business type of unit. So I've always, I appreciated that about them last year, watching some Niners games. And, you know, I pretty much watch any televised game during the year, every televised game. So I've watched plenty of Niners games to know that it didn't matter who was running the ball. They were going to run the ball down your throat.
Yeah, then the Niners offensive line added a lot of zeros to a lot of contracts for all these running backs and receivers getting paid coming out of that team.
All right, and did you want to do your number one? Or you want
Sure. Okay, so my number one I don't think is the best offensive line, but I think it's the best fit for what they do offensively. And for me, that's Philadelphia. There's not a hole on that line. I don't know that I could name you more than two players on it, but they work together really well. I love their center, Jason Kelsey. Lane Johnson at right tackle is very solid. But what they do really well is what Philly tries to do, you know, with their running quarterback options. Jalen Hurts runs a lot of those kind of almost college-y option kind of situations. They run the ball very effectively. And that offensive line is really built for what they want to do. I don't think that they're the best players. I don't think they're the best line. But I think they're the best at what the Eagles ask them to do. And for me, that makes you a great line, is being able to do your coach's vision the way they want it to do. And for me, that's Philadelphia. They get the job done. I've seen them beat the Saints recently, even though the Saints are better teams, because they were able to dictate what they wanted to do offensively and then do it.
Yeah, you know, I personally always hated blocking for a scrambling quarterback.
Oh, it's like the worst thing in the world.
I've always disliked those quarterbacks. Give me a pocket passer over a scrambler any day. But I'll tell you what, they do have a pretty solid offensive line over there. And Lane Johnson, he's been holding down that right tackle position for a very long time. I'm coming to a blank right now for the left tackle that has taken over for Jason Peters after all those years. But I want
Jordan Mailata.
I want to say that there has not been much of a drop-off from Jason Peters, who is a Pro Bowl left tackle for many years. There has not been much of a drop-off that I have seen coming from that position. I think that that's a very good ranking right there for them.
Yeah, I agree. So who do you got number two? We'll go down this line a little bit quicker.
All right, my number two is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that pick so much.
You know what? I always, as much as I hate this guy, I also recognize what I see. And Tom Brady is great. He, you know, and that's because he is always so upright. You know, some of these pockets that he has in his life are pockets of quarterback dreams. He was the only QB to be pressured fewer than 20% of his dropbacks. You know, and I admire their center too, in Jensen. He was a hog right there in the middle.
Yeah, he's mean and nasty.
Yes, and you know what? With the retiring of Marpet, I really do see them being able to take care with Shaq Mason. For some reason, Tampa Bay is like, okay, what New England player do you want this year, Tom Brady?
And they go out and get another. And they just give them to him for some reason.
And you know what? And I really don't see this offensive line taking a big drop off, you know, with that rookie that they had last year at right tackle. I think that it's going to be another good offensive line for them.
Tristan Wirfs.
Tristan Wirfs.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on a lot of those points, other than I refuse to say they have a good anything because I hate them so much. But you've seen when you pressure Brady and you get to him and you beat him up, he falters. And that's the reason he's lost now four consecutive regular season games to the Saints, because they were able to get guys in his face. And that's when he makes mistakes. He says that over the course of his career, very few people were able to do that. When they had their undefeated season into that Super Bowl, that Giants team had a ridiculous defensive line, and they got to him and they won the game. So I agree that their offensive line is good, and I agree that it has to be good because Brady's success relies on it.
Yes.
Okay, for me, it's kind of the same way. Kind of the same way. I'm going number two, Green Bay. And then it's the same methodology that I think this is an overrated hack of a quarterback. I hate Aaron Rodgers. Everyone who's listening or Packers fans should shut it off right now because I can't stand him. He's overrated, and he stole an MVP from Drew Brees in 2011. Anyway, they have excellent offensive tackle play. They play very well into what Rodgers likes to do, which is to buy time, make something out of nothing, and launch that deep ball and show up on SportsCenter five times a night. And I think a lot of that comes from having really solid tackle play that you can put on an island and let him kind of work through the rest of it. So for me, Green Bay is up there. It's number two. Everyone likes to tell me how Rodgers does it all on his own, and that's nonsense. You can't do anything on your own. You need to have a team around you. And it definitely a better offensive line play than people think has been propping up Rodgers for a little while.
Number three, I got the Cowboys. You know, with Teron Smith, he's always a very highly sought after tackle in the NFL. I think he's great. You know,
yeah.
I like to see these big athletic guys right there on the outside that just shut down guys, edge rushers, and he is that guy. He also. Graded at 91.9 for PFF. You know, if that's a consolation to anybody, that is a very high rating for a left tackle that's having to go against great pass rushers all year, you know.
That's right.
You know, and then on the other side of that, Zach Martin, he's one of the best interior offensive line you could ask for.
100%.
And, you know, like being able to have running backs like Ezekiel and Tony Pollard be able to break off big yards behind them is, a consolation to how hard they work as a unit to open up those lanes for those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually have the Cowboys on my list a little bit lower down. And I have them on there a little bit lower only because they lost Lael Collins, which is overrated in our books because we're LSU fans up here in Louisiana. I'll touch on Dallas a little bit more a little bit later. But I absolutely agree there. You know, we talked a long time. Last few years, people always said you want to have Dallas's O-line, but you don't want to have to draft it. You know, and Dallas put in that effort. They drafted offensive linemen and they built that up. And, that's one of the reasons that they have had the offensive success lately that they have. They've had good running backs. They've had good receivers. And you don't do that unless you have a good offensive line.
Absolutely.
All right, so my number three is the Chargers. My number three is the Chargers because I think how well that rookie inside lineman Johnson is going to translate in. I think that shores up a lot of issues. PFF has them at like 12 going into this year, but I hate PFF and everything it stands for. I really think Pipkins is going to develop. I think Johnson's going to come in like he was already there. I like Slater on the left side. I think the Chargers could really be a solid offensive line group. They have the young quarterback, they have the young weapons. All they need to really turn that corner to being an elite offense is that line coming together, and all the pieces are there. I'm just kind of rolling the dice that this is the year that they come together.
You know what? I love your number three spot right now. I really do.
I had a feeling you might.
I did not rank them in my top five. But I'll tell you, I freaking loved Slater as a rookie last year.
Yes.
You know, they showed a clip of Austin Eckler trying to help him combo block Myles Garrett, and he ended up blocking Myles Garrett into a sack, and Slater telling Austin Eckler, "Don't worry about it. I'll block him by myself." I love that type of mentality, you know?
Yeah, grown man stuff right there.
And I really do feel like they are a unit that could move into the top five by the time the year is all said and done. It just depends a lot for me on the play of right tackle. And I would love for Trey Pipkins to take it over. I've admired his stature for a very long time, and if he could put it all together this year, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, is this year three for Pipkins? Is year two, year three?
Yes, it's year three for him.
Yeah, I find a lot that's kind of the make or break season for an offensive lineman. Like, you should have it by year three, and if you don't, you don't. But that's usually when guys will arrive. It might take two seasons to get your body to where it needs to be in the NFL. And that third season is really a lot of guys turn the corner. That's what we're hoping for in a lot of guys on the Saints. And that's what I think is Pipkin's situation now, is that he's had time to – he's been thrown into the fire. He's taken the hits. And now it's time to come into your own. And I'm thinking that it happens.
Yeah, and so for my number four slot right here in my offensive line rankings, I have the Browns. You know, I feel like the Browns always have no problem investing in their offensive line. And I've loved it from, you know, to great players of the Browns offensive line, like Alex Mack and Joe Thomas. You know what I'm saying?
Joe Thomas is incredible.
They always have really solid offensive line. When they went out last offseason and got Jack Conkling from Tennessee, I really liked that. Last year, he was hurt a lot, barely even played. But still, because of how much draft picks they invest in their offensive line, they have no problems blocking for a guy like Chubb and Hunt and opening up these big lanes. Yeah. You know, there was even a running back last year. I forget that gentleman's name, but a nobody guy had a 200-yard rushing game for the Browns. You know, so it's like, you know, they're another one of those units that it doesn't matter who you put back there. You're going to run the ball.
Yeah.
And I love those units because that speaks to the solidarity of that offensive line and how just tough they are. And I think I remember when I was doing research for this, that every single offensive lineman for the Browns had a 7-year higher PFF ranking, nice. Which is a pretty nice solid ranking to have go around for your offensive line. Yeah. They will have, if Deshaun Watson plays this year, they will have the time of blocking for a scrambling quarterback over, you know, some guys that they have over there. But it's looking like it's going to be a pocket passer, at least for the beginning. So I'm looking
to start out with,
I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to transition from that to when the long-term starter, if he gets to play this year, how they go from a pocket passer to a scrambling quarterback, because it is a transition of how it goes. This could be the spot where the Chargers end up for me by the end of the year, and the Browns could be completely off this list. I don't know. But I really feel like the Browns have always had a really solid offensive line because of all the
Yeah. Yeah, lost in a lot of the drama of the Browns is how solid their offensive line has been. You know, because we talk about the OBJ and the Jarvis Landrys and the Baker Mayfield and now the drama with their new quarterback, Watson. But their line has been solid for the last couple of years. You know, they put the attention into it, and it would have showed off if there was a little more stability, anything else in their offense. PFF loves them for what they're working to their algorithm where, well, PFF has them at number two of all their offensive lines. They don't make my top five, though. But part of that is because of Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson, as we talked about earlier, the Texans have had a okay offensive line, really. Yet Watson has taken more sacks than any quarterback for the last few years. And part of that is on him. At a certain point, when there's smoke, there's fire. And Watson has a bad habit of not treating his pocket the way he needs to. He'll roll out of protection and take sacks and hold the ball that he does not need to be doing. And I think that's going to, assuming he plays at some point this year, that's going to translate poorly for that offensive line in Cleveland, who've gotten used to, you know, maybe not the best quarterback play with Baker Mayfield, but he got the ball out quick and they ran the ball a lot. And when you have a guy like Watson, you're not going to be relying on the run as heavily. You're going to want to throw that football. And what he does doesn't necessarily help the offensive line. All right. How about number four? I've got the Niners. We talked about them a little already. We're not going to dig into the Niners too much farther. They've put a lot of zeros on Debo Samuel's contract. They're doing their job. It's a good offense, and they're a good offense despite their weapons being kind of weird and their quarterback being non-existent. in my opinion. Niners offensive line is the reason their offense is any good. And that's why they're number four on my list.
You know, I had them ranked much higher, and I feel like I agree with what you said. They will put the zeros on these guys' contracts at the end of the year. So, you know, you can't argue with that. That's a big consistency for that team is their offensive line. For number five here, I got the Colts.
Ooh, that's a good pick.
You know, I feel like it's not a single player game. You know what I'm saying? It is a team effort. And when you got a guy like Jonathan Taylor breaking off some of the runs that he did and being able to do what he did last year with his 20 touchdowns, you also have to give some recognition to the offensive line. I hope that for his run that he had last year, I hope he bought all these linemen some very nice things because they deserve it. And, you know, you got a guy like Quentin Nelson, yep, who is an animal, and, you know, another center, you know, that you could admire too, and Ryan Kelly.
Yeah, he's a fantastic center. He does it the right way, you know, very cerebral, very technical.
Absolutely. And, you know, just like the runs that they opened up on the inside right there, you know, I really feel like is really solid offensive line play. And, you know, I feel like, you know, team success is team success. It's absolutely that running back can't run without that offensive line. And I feel like him having the year that he had is also a huge year for the offensive line. Yeah. You know, me and you, Craig, we used to always say we got a touchdown when we,
yeah, absolutely,
when we'd be in the end zone with our running back standing there. Not only did this guy get a touchdown, we got a touchdown too. 100%. And you know, and I always felt that, I always believed that. And I know that those guys have to be basking in Jonathan Taylor's year because they are the reason for it, you know, and I appreciate that.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. They're only not in my top five because they're better at running the ball than maybe passing, and their offense is kind of shifting in that direction. If the Colts this year play a more run heavy offense with their new quarterback, Matt Ryan, and they really lean into that strength, which is running the ball and doing that the way that they do it. Yeah, they're going to be on my top five in no time. You can't talk about the Colts without talking about Quentin Nelson. You can't have an offensive line podcast without mentioning Nelson, one of the best in the game at any position.
Oh, yeah.
And the Colts are absolutely a fantastic offensive line. That's going to be a good football team with bringing in Matt Ryan and the changes they made on defense. The Colts are going to be a good team this year.
You know, Matt Ryan has always been a guy that I've respected and thought that he really was a good quarterback. You know, they had some atrocious defenses over there in Atlanta. And that was ultimately what did them in the, you know, not being able to keep Tom Brady from making his comeback defensively is what ultimately lost them their Super Bowl. And, you know, I feel like Matt Ryan still has some left in the tank too. I feel like he hasn't been a very like sacked quarterback or an injury prone quarterback. I look at him the same way that I looked at Phillip Rivers. He's very not going to miss games. He's going to be there. He's an Iron Man quarterback who is not going to miss games. And at the end of the year, the way the Colts lost and the way that the Colts year went because of Carson Wentz being out for injuries here and there, you're going to be glad that you have a guy like Matt Ryan who's going to be a consistent passer in that offense, you know?
Yeah, now understand, most of the folks listening to this probably found us on our Saints channel, and there's going to be a little bit of vitriol for any Matt Ryan love that we spit out here, but he's not on the Falcons anymore. Everybody relax. 28-3. He did it. He crapped his pants in that preseason game. It's fine. We don't have to care about it anymore because it's on the Colts. But I agree. I've always respected Matt Ryan. He's never been the reason that I hated Atlanta. He was just unfortunately there. you know, he got kind of screwed by this whole Deshaun Watson thing. Atlanta really, they sold the farm to try to bring him in, and Ryan got out of there. And then, you know, Watson left him standing at the altar. And now they're going to ride with Marcus Mariota in there instead of Matt Ryan. And that, you know, say what you want about Mariota, that's a downgrade. I think that's a good addition. And
I think it's a blessing and a curse for Matt Ryan. You know, like he was cursed with all that stuff that was going on, but he is going to come out smelling like roses as he could lead the Colts to the playoffs.
And a little bit of a Matt Stafford going to LA kind of situation.
Almost. Oh yeah, I
okay. So let's wrapping up our rankings. I have the Cowboys fifth. We talked about every reason the Cowboys' offensive line is good. We don't have to get into it again. But the Cowboys' offensive line, solid, particularly in the passing game, and well-deserving of being in anyone's top five offensive line power rankings.
Yeah, I had them high on my list, obviously. Outside of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they had the only fewer pressures and drop-back rating from PFF when I was doing my research on it.
That's interesting because you think of Prescott as a scrambling guy, but the fact that he had that many non-pressured passing downs really makes you realize that he can be a pocket passer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, everybody, that's going to wrap it up for our first episode of the Big Ugly Podcast. We're getting this going in the offseason. By the time we get to regular season, we're going to have stuff like best offensive lineman performance of the week. We're going to have rookie of the year watch. We're going to have our power rankings move up and down. We're going to have pancake block of the week. Do not want to miss that. Keep it tuned on here. We're going to be doing this off and on until the season starts, and it will be every week. So I wanted to thank you for joining us. This is the California Cajun. That is Nate the Great. This has been the Big Ugly Podcast.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was a blast. I can't wait to get into all this offensive line content that I've always wanted to hear on podcasts. And now we're about to bring it to you guys from the Big Uglies for the Big Uglies. Let's do it.
Let's go.